Welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces on KTAL LP 101.5 FM. And we're also broadcasting in Hurley today. But we are back talking with Dr. Jonna Williams. One of the subjects is the doctor shortage, which is a big deal around the country, but particularly in our area and in other rural areas. Why that is and what it's like to be a doctor here and other related questions. So let me ask you for your view, what are the reasons we have such a terrible shortage of doctors and other medical personnel?
So in the past few years, there were changes made in the Medical Malpractice Act, and so malpractice costs have gone up for physicians, and this is a bigger expense for them in their practice. And really, a lot of people would say if you're a physician practicing in New Mexico, you either have been sued or you will be sued. So the malpractice is a huge concern for physicians. In addition to that, when physicians have private practice, you know, the expenses that they have are unique in New Mexico because we pay gross receipts tax on any cash, co-pays, co-insurance, and that's not something that we can put back on the patient. If you go to the store and buy your hardware supplies, you pay gross receipts tax, and you actually pay that rather than the Home Depot paying it.
And we should say that a bill to fix that was actually passed by the legislature but was then vetoed by the governor in the past session.
Right.
I agree with you for sure on the gross receipts tax. I moved back here after being a lawyer in California for a lot of years and was shocked that I had to charge my clients an extra percentage. Didn't seem like it should be done. But that's particularly so, you know, even if you can justify doing it with lawyers and other professionals, not doctors. I guess my question, I look at the trial lawyers and they aren't too honest about their funding and that sort of thing. But I also look at the people who are saying that malpractice is the primary cause of our shortage. And that doesn't seem to be true in the sense that there are other factors that, the age of our population, the professional isolation that you have if you're not only in New Mexico but if you're in Hurley, say, and you're Bayard instead of Las Cruces or wherever it might be, there seem to be a lot of reasons, including, I mean, as I understand it, you're the doctor, but you got your education in South Carolina and then chose to come to our wonderful state. We'll ask you about that later. But doctors, numerically, the majority, if they graduate from law school somewhere and then do a residency somewhere, they'll stay in that area where they're doing the residency, right?
That is often the case, yes.
Well, we ain't got a lot of residency positions, as I understand it. And that is probably a bigger factor. Now, whether we can do anything about it, I don't know, but that's probably a bigger factor in doctors deciding to practice here than the malpractice thing is.
So I do think that's become something people are bringing up. I feel like it's a deflection, very much like the corporate piece that hospitals are the cause. You know, the issue with corporate medicine is across the country. So it's no different than New Mexico. And I think it would be great to have more training programs, but we need doctors to train those residents. And we don't have the doctors to even do that. I grew up in a small town. I think you saw I grew up in Clemson, South Carolina. We actually drove 20 minutes to a hospital or to even see a physician to a neighboring town. And so when we moved here because of my husband's job, I found it a very unique school. Clemson is a land-grant college just like New Mexico State. So I enjoyed being able to come here and raise my family here. And I think if you talk to people, you know, we have people that go to medical school from all over the country. And a lot of them love the smaller life. I know one of the students right now that's at Burrell College of Medicine, an excellent student, mm-hmm. comes from Anthony, New Mexico. Her desire is to go back and serve her community. And, you know, for all of us who have gotten to know her, that's what exactly we want her to be able to do. But she's been told, go to Anthony, Texas. You won't have as high a malpractice. You won't have to pay gross receipts. You have $300,000 worth of student loans that can be repaid. And right now our state, I think, is maxing it at about 75%. And we have very few people that actually receive that repayment. So it makes me sad that she's thinking I'll practice on the border so that I can serve my community rather than going back to my community.
I think it's important for people to understand a couple of things. One is that we were the only state in the nation last year that saw our health care pool shrink. Decrease. Every other state added new healthcare workers. Clearly, that is one of the most competitive industries in the nation right now, and we are just simply not competing. That's number one. Number two, we also have the oldest physicians in the nation. I think the number was 39% are age 60 and older. And so we already are not adding to our pool, but we are in position where we are going to see more of those people retiring than in any other state. And there's a reason for that, and it is our state legislature. We have a state legislature that is ruled by lawyers. It just is. Any bill to go through the legislature has to go through both the House and Senate Judiciary Committees before it ever gets to the floor. And those committees are run by and filled with lawyers. And I'm sorry, but they are protecting their own interests. They just simply are. And until there is enough public pressure on particularly lawmakers who are not attorneys, who may not share that same bias, but this is something that the people are going to have to take power on, because the legislature will protect its own interests, in my opinion.
Let me throw in, for people's benefit, we had scheduled Joe Cervantes, who is a not only a trial lawyer, but a legislator.
And the chair of the Judiciary Committee.
Long time and powerful legislator. And what I keep hoping we can do is having a discussion where both sides are here and we can bring up issues and say, what do you think, doctor? What do you think, lawyer? And unfortunately, he got called to a court hearing that he had not expected the judge to set for then. He had no choice about it. So he will be on next week, but Dr. Williams couldn't be on next week, so she's stuck with this week. So I'd love to have kind of a round table.
Yeah. And my colleagues and I would love to talk with him, too. We have made many attempts to speak with him and have been unable to schedule anything.
Well, call in next week. He'll be here.
Yeah. That's right. That's a good idea.
But it does seem, I mean, and you know, I'll say this to him when he's here or ask him about it. It certainly seems unquestionable that the trial lawyers have engaged in some questionable conduct. For example, they have they hid the ball as far as their financial support until the Ethics Commission of the state said, wait a minute, you got to do this. And then they said, well, to settle the thing, yeah, we'll do it, claiming they were doing it voluntarily. And lo and behold, they had described themselves as an alliance of poor people who, you know, yeah, got hurt by doctors. And all the financial support was other trial lawyers, even from other states. So that's not good. On the other hand, the way that your movement, if I can describe it that way, has focused on malpractice. I mean, I understand the malpractice. I hated it as a lawyer. My God, I got to pay this much, and it wasn't as bad. Yours is worse. But there seem to be other things we need to work on that are at least equally involved in causing this, and we don't hear so much about them.
Well, and there are so many things, but what we try to stand out and show what's different in New Mexico, because we are losing so many people. And, you know, you think about it, we recruit people to retire here. It's such a beautiful state to retire, but so many people leave to get their health care. And we are blessed that we have these three surrounding states that take our patients. We have the western part of New Mexico that goes to Arizona, the eastern part that goes to Texas, and the northern part that goes to Colorado. But you know what? Some people have trouble getting in the car and just getting to my office. And so yeah. I can't get them out of state. And that is really sad.
In terms of the differences between, I mean, we are also the most spread out state. This congressional district is the biggest that's not an actual state. And we have to drive, you know, 80 miles to Deming or whatever.
When I moved here, I thought it was, you know, I came from Houston, so a very big city, very easy access to wonderful health care. And I thought, wow, you know, this area is growing. When I came, we didn't have a Starbucks. So I don't know if people grade their town by Starbucks, but now we have several. And I thought, we're going to service southern New Mexico. We're going to build, on our medical care. We're going to be able to have Silver City and Lordsburg and Deming and Alamogordo and Tiercy all come here. And, you know, we can't even take care of our own people here.
And can I say that Think New Mexico, which is leading the effort on this, I think it's fair to say, has focused on several issues, not just medical malpractice reform. They're also talking about the need to have interstate compacts, which did not get passed by the legislature this year because Senator Cervantes is afraid to give out information, and so we should certainly talk to him about that. Also, the gross receipts tax that the governor vetoed, and the malpractice. The reason the malpractice gets all the attention is because the numbers are so outrageous, is because it's so easy to understand. You start talking about interstate compacts with people, that may be equally as important, but it's not going to get as much attention.
And one good example of the malpractice, a colleague of mine is an OBGYN. When the malpractice rates went up, she decided to just do in-office OBGYN. She does no surgery. She does no deliveries. She pays $35,000 a year for her malpractice insurance. Her colleague in Albuquerque, with the changes, pays $100,000 a year to do in-office deliveries and surgery. Her colleague in Colorado, who works in the office, does deliveries and does surgeries, pays $31,000. So a person in Colorado pays less than both of them. And it often, you wonder how much that impacts the fact that really in Las Cruces, in a county of over 200,000 people, we really only have one hospital that's delivering babies.
How do we solve that? Because I know the easy answer is, well, we cap awards, but some people, you know, are in pretty tragic circumstances. So does the state do a fund?
So if you look at other states, there are lots of things that are out there. But specifically, we have to look at punitive damages because our malpractice insurance covers us for everything but punitive damages. And there's no limit and there's a very low bar to say there's a punitive damage. I did not go to medical school to hurt patients. You know, I love what I do and I want to help patients. But you know what? I've messed up. I've had to have hard conversations with my patients. And my colleagues recognize that too. We realize there is a good reason for having malpractice insurance, but we feel like it needs to be more reasonable, like states across the country.
Yeah, I think it would be great to discuss with you and Joe Cervantes, what about changing the standard of proof, as people are beginning to realize, you know, in criminal cases, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. In most civil cases, it's preponderance of the evidence, which one side will tell the jury means if the evidence is equal side to side and a feather drops on one side. And then there's clear and convincing evidence and other kind of moderate standards that are in between, and we should perhaps strengthen that.
Well, these trials should happen in the county where they occur. We should not do venue shopping. We should not have trials moved to places.
Again, I wish Joe were here and we could hear, maybe he would agree. Maybe he would defend the choice of, you know, being able to choose your forum around the state. But I tend to agree with you. Of course, there's another. People don't mention this one too much, and one trial lawyer I mentioned it to kind of snorted and said, but as you probably know, if you've been sued for malpractice, they have a system here where at some point early in the case, a panel of doctors and lawyers and a panel of six looks at it and sort of says, is this reasonable? And I know of a doctor who's a friend and I believe did nothing wrong, who's being sued. The panel came out 6-0 against the lawyers suing him, against the plaintiff, and they persisted. And I think we ought to consider a lot. I'll mention this to Joe, where if that happens and they lose, that lawyer needs to pay the damages of the attorney fees of the doctor, and at least put some teeth in that.
Right. The other thing, there were malpractice changes not long after I left Texas, and I believe when there is a malpractice case that comes up, say in Texas, within 30 days of filing it, they need to have an expert that agrees. Mm. And I think that could be very beneficial too.
As I'm sure you're aware, the people on the other side are not picking fights with doctors. They're picking fights with corporate healthcare executives.
Right.
As somebody who's kind of caught in the middle of all that, what is your response to that part of their argument?
So corporate healthcare is, a lot of it now is private equity. And if you understand how that operates, they have ways to hide their finances, to divvy it out different places. And I don't think suing them is going to make them change what they're doing. So I think we need to look at a different approach.
Some have suggested that a minor factor, but not one of the three or four top factors in doctor shortage, is that very thing, the fact that we're seeing more private equity controlling more health entities, and they are so, we've had this problem with the hospital, with Memorial, they're so bottom line driven that it can endanger patient security, and facts, studies show that.
Absolutely.
What's your opinion on that?
I totally agree. And a lot of it is by how do they cut staff? And cutting staff is often by cutting physicians. So everywhere they can, they don't hire a physician. They hire, a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant to manage things. And their training is different. It's shorter. While I have, several nurse practitioners and physician assistants that I appreciate and respect, the school system is churning them out very, very fast. They can churn them out in 2 years. It took me 7 years to train. I'm a general pediatrician. It took some people 10 plus years to train. So we can't, we have to recognize that longer training allows them to have some skills that someone that does 2 years of training won't have.
Did you notice that the administration in Washington has just cut the amount that people can borrow in graduate school?
No.
Yeah. I actually mentioned it, I think, in one of my columns, but I don't remember how I came across this, but they basically, the cap, the normal person going through medical school borrows upwards of $200,000. I think the average is $235,000 or something, and they just cut the cap of what you can borrow to $200,000, which is basically telling anybody who's poor and maybe has the stuff to be a doctor, you can't do it.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes.
I would, when I was going to school, there were scholarships that paid, and that actually I had received a scholarship that paid for me to be a primary care physician. Because at that time we were seeing so many people specialize, and I think that could be beneficial too, to see if we could find some foundations and private funding that would support some of these great young students to become physicians.
We have, I think, 30-day session coming up this year. Do you know yet what the governor, if anything, is going to put on the call for this year?
I don't.
She has put malpractice on. I don't know how wide that goes, whether it's just malpractice or whether we can also talk about the GRT and some other issues that they ought to be talking about, but she has at least put malpractice on.
So I guess my question is, for people who are concerned about this, which legislators, I always tell people, certainly contact your own senator and representative, because you're going to get more traction with them than anybody else. But what advice would you have to people who are concerned about this and who want to make their voice heard at the legislature?
Well, I agree. I think the legislators need to hear from people. There are two groups that have been really impactful. One is Patient Primeros. Have you had them come to speak on your show?
I don't think we have. But yeah, we should.
And they are great.
And they are actually included in the thing we're working with the ALR on, so I think we will.
So, and then there's another patient-led, but it's really helping people to understand the impact that they have. And, you know, I recognize the role of a senator or in a legislator is tough, or representative, because they're taking in information from everyone, but I think they need to hear from their constituents. We found that Jeff Steinborn and Sarah Silva and Doreen Gallegos and Michaela Cadena have all been really open to listen to us. And what we have found, like, we've not been able to schedule with Joseph Cervantes. We have not been able to schedule with Joanne Ferrari. You know, they just push back. So I encourage people to reach out to all their representatives, and of course to thank Sarah and Michaela and Jeff and Doreen for supporting us, but seeing if they can kind of help us make some headway with the other legislators.
Yeah. Switching topics a little, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. I don't want to cut you off on that subject, but you know, there are other interesting questions to ask you, one of which is, why kids as opposed to adults? Why a pediatrician?
Well, you know, when I went to undergrad, I actually was planning to be a pharmacist. And this dates me, because when I went to pharmacy school, it was only 5 years. It's a 7-year program now. Wow. But as I was getting through, I just really missed working with kids. I grew up being a summer camp counselor, babysitter. I just love working with kids. And I do feel, and you know, another part of my interest is really just kind of preventative care. I'm board certified in culinary medicine, and I think what you put in your body makes a huge difference. I think you can start that with kids.
That was my next question, because my wife's more knowledgeable than I, but that's, you know, we certainly think most physicians do not pay enough attention to diet. What would you tell folks they ought to do on that subject in terms of?
Well, what I tell my patients at Full Bloom is it's better to eat from the farm than the factory. So that's kind of a black and white way. And I think a lot of my parents will even say, the kids will say in the store now, is this from a farm or a factory? It's a good thing to kind of notice. But I think we want to go back to eating whole foods. I think a lot of the chemicals that are put in our processed foods are causing a lot of issues. And I've seen it with patients. I have had more than one patient say, this all started when I ate a bag of Takis.
How receptive, I mean, you just mentioned the kids, but in general, and I guess you're dealing with the kids, but you're also dealing with the parents. How receptive are they to that idea in terms of not only, you know, being amused when their kids follow your advice, but whether they take your advice on that personally?
Well, and I do ask for it to be a family effort. Yeah. And I think a lot of them do. I feel like a lot I'm planting a seed. I think it's a lifestyle change, so it's hard. And certainly right now, I think we have a lot of families. They're really busy. They're busy raising their kids. They've got activities after school, and trying to help them learn how to prioritize eating real food through that journey is tough.
We have our next guest coming through the door, so we're getting ready to wrap up. What haven't we asked you about the legislature? Are there any things that we mentioned, the Interstate Compact and the GRT and the malpraxis, any other issues that might be helpful?
You know, some of the other things that they mentioned, even that Think New Mexico report, is like credentialing. And we recognize a lot of, like, insurance makes it challenging. There is a central credentialing for physicians, which they will use, but then they'll ask us to send the same things into them. So they're not really, they're causing us to do a lot of extra work. Again, that's across the country, so we probably don't focus on it as much. But I do think patients are frustrated with insurance. And I had one parent tell me, it's like another mortgage on a house, and that's a huge price for families.
As you're watching what's happening in Congress, obviously things appear like they're going to just get more expensive when it comes to access to health care. That's got to be frustrating.
Right, and I do think part of that is the corporatization of health care. They're disconnecting you from your primary care doctor. people tell me they can't get into their doctor for a sick visit, so they send them to urgent care. Urgent care, you don't know the person that's there, and they will charge you the cost of an emergency room visit so that the corporate healthcare is making more money. So there's a bad cycle. And so really addressing malpractice and gross receipts so that we could get more private doctors who are not owned by corporations. And I know plenty of doctors who sold out that are going to finish their contract and get back out. So they see the negatives of corporate healthcare. But if we can have people that have that relationship again, you know what? I was on the phone with a family this morning at 6 a.m. who was traveling and had a sick child, and they knew they could call me, and we addressed it without them having to go to urgent care. And that's the type of medicine we need, where people know their doctor.
As most people know now, all the other civilized countries have, I mean, if I'm in Taiwan, or my father-in-law lives in Japan, you know, I worked in Taiwan for a while, if I need to go to the doctor, it may end up costing me a buck or something, or 29 cents, but by and large, it's something that happens.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that. What do most doctors think? Initially when people talked about, oh, it's socialized medicine and doctors supposedly didn't like it. I don't know what the AMA says now. But from a physician's point of view, why don't we have it and should we have it?
Gosh, the only thing I can tell you is that I know people that are, say, from Canada or Europe, where they have it, and there are positives and negatives. The positive is, I think the systems connect and talk, and that was supposed to be a plan when we got electronic medical records, that we could pull up stuff from Memorial or pull up stuff from the clinic they used to go to, and we can't. The systems aren't communicating. So I wish we could prioritize that, because I think that would streamline care. I still know of patients that have to have connections to actually get certain surgeries in socialized medicine countries, and I don't think Americans are ready for that. They want to have, if they can pay for it, they want access quickly.
Can I ask?
I didn't see a problem with that in Taiwan, but
let me finish with an impossible question to answer in 1 minute. And that is, what impact is AI going to have on doctors in the medical field?
So far, I've found it's been beneficial, because we've just done a little bit with our electronic medical record. And I had a call the other day that my app allowed me to do a visit with a patient, especially as I've now been practicing 30 years. I don't always remember things, so it's so much better at helping me document, and it gets the little bits and pieces so that when I go back, I remember the conversation better with the patient. So I think that's going to be helpful, and then we'll be able to send that to the patient so that they see everything we talked about.
Okay.
We're not going to take a break. We do want to thank you again, Dr. Jonna Williams.
Thanks for having me. Sorry I can't make it next week. But maybe we could schedule a time next year for us to talk with Joseph.
We will try. Last thing, if somebody wants to call you and ask about changing their diet for medical reasons or that sort of thing, you want to give folks your number or a way to contact you?
Yes, probably. I have my main number at Full Bloom Pediatrics is 575-532-6006.
And thanks again for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It was a good conversation.